Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome in. It's a new edition of the Lions 24/7 podcast. Sean Fitz, Tyler Donahue, back in Happy Valley after a week in Dallas where we saw Penn State win the Cotton Bowl 53-39 over Memphis. We broke that one down on Saturday after the game, after leaving Jerry World from our hotel room in Dallas. Hopefully you had a chance to listen to that. Spoke a lot about the game. We're going to move forward here and very quickly, much like last year in the aftermath of a bowl game, we see an assistant coach being moved on from by this program, to put it mildly. And last year wasn't necessarily surprising with David Corley. This time around, it's a staff veteran, Matt Linegrover, four seasons with the team. Offensive line seemingly had its most impressive year out of the 4 years he has been there, maybe the entire six-year tenure of James Franklin, but Franklin announcing and confirming on New Year's Eve that they will be looking for a new offensive line coach. That search is well underway at this point. And Sean, as we said, Linegrover, enjoyed talking with him over the years. He's a guy who always seemed to provide some levity in the conversation as well, seemed well-liked by his players, but it's a tough business sometimes, and they have decided to make a change at a key position on the staff.
Contract not renewed is the official language, so take from that what you will. What I take from that is that James Franklin has somebody in mind. You wouldn't make that move unless you kind of knew your next step, and given what Franklin has done with assistant coaches in the past, it seems like, you know, a move that he's made before and a move that he expected to make. But you're right. I mean, this was his best year in terms of having an offensive line, I guess from start to finish. It's kind of in the same mold as Ricky Ronnie. I mean, if you stuck with Linegrover, okay, fine. If you stuck with Ronnie, okay, fine. But probably not going to get you where you want to go. And with that contract extension, with that talk of being elite or making the championship playoff, it really probably wasn't there. So I do know that the new guy is going to have some tools to work with. They've got five guys coming back with starting experience. They're going to have some things to figure out on the two deep, going to have some things to figure out at left guard as well. But a pretty good situation for whomever Franklin has in mind to come in and take this job.
And as we discussed last week, Sandy Barber had a limited availability down in Texas, and one of the things she was asked about was Franklin's salary pool for his assistant coaching staff, and it's something that she said the number was met, what he needed to do, and you have to imagine that kind of emboldens him a bit as he pursues someone new for this staff. And really pretty remarkable, no one is left from that offensive coaching staff in terms of positional coaches from 2017. Joe Moorhead, of course, the offensive coordinator there, just moments before we come on to record this podcast, we learned that Mississippi State has fired Joe Moorhead after his second season there. Interesting set of circumstances, to say the least, but he left, Charles Huff left, your wide receivers coach Gaddis gone, and then Corley fired very quickly. And of course, they've added some talent, but Ricky Ronnie, quarterbacks coach, tight ends coach, and now Matt Linegrover is gone. So, I think you like what you got in Sider and Parker, and very clearly, Tyler Bowen has done a great job at the tight ends room, but a lot of turnover. A lot of the guys who were recruited to come to campus, they've had to get along with some of these new faces in town. And to juxtapose that, Sean, the entire positional coaching staff on defense is still the same as it was during the 2016 Big Ten championship run.
Yeah, you had this stat written down about no positional coaches remain or offensive coaches remain from 2017. That's kind of hard to believe. And then you think about it and you're like, okay, I could see that. But now you get a new coordinator in Kirk Shiraka, who we're going to talk about later in the show with Ryan Burns of Gopher Illustrated. Some great stuff from him. It seems like an ideal time to sort of move on and see what you can get going, because, you take a look at Penn State's offensive line. While they have improved, while some guys had pretty good seasons, I mean, by the end of the year, you were still back in that same place where you have to block the Ohio State. I mean, it's not about going out and running over Purdue or Pitt or Buffalo or something like that. You got to get out there. You got to block the Ohio States of the world. And really, the next guy, he's going to have some pieces. Rasheed Walker's got, you know, at least we're saying at least one more year. He's a fantastic talent. Michael Mennett's going to be in the running for the Remington next year. CJ Thorpe probably played his best game of his career in the Cotton Bowl. So you got some pieces to work with. You got some things to work through. Will Fries has to get better. Obviously, left guard's going to be something. You got to figure out what you have, you know, with guys like Caden Wallace and guys like Anthony Wiggin. But you have numbers now. They're bringing more numbers into the program in this signing class. You're finally going to have maybe two, close to a three, I think 13 scholarship offensive linemen next year. So you've got pieces to play with. The new guy's going to get in. And this is a vital year in offensive line recruiting. 2021, you've got Landon Tengwell, you've got Nolan Rucci, Tristan Lee. I mean, just all over the place. Wyatt Millam down in West Virginia. You've got so much talent in your backyard. You're not going to close on all of them, but you're going to have an opportunity to put together a very good offensive line class. And when I take a look at this class as a whole in 2021, the offensive line, outside of quarterback, the offensive line is where it starts for me.
Yeah, Nate Bruce on board right now is the lone offensive line commit for that 2021 class.
I always forget about Nate Bruce. That's it's my
right
bad.
In the backyard, right?
Yeah, he's very much in the backyard, yeah.
And his offensive line coach, Richard Muldrow, a guy I've brought up before, got to know him at Rutgers when he was a young recruit coming into the college level. He played for Kirk Shiraka at Rutgers and then also at his next stop down in Richmond. So, he loved the hire, you know, and I think that bodes well for Nate Bruce and we'll see what happens with this offensive line coach hiring, but we got some pretty immediate reaction from Landon Tengwell, courtesy of Brian Doan, who was down in Orlando for the Future 50 event at the Under Armour All-America event. And, you know, Landon has always handled, we talked about this before, one of the most mature kids I've ever spoken with, and that's going back to halfway through his freshman year when Penn State made him the first offensive line target on their 2021 board. And, you know, his reaction, and he seems to be a guy right now, he's got the top three, Michigan, Penn State, Notre Dame, but I think a lot of us like where Penn State is with Landon Tengwell, and again, handling that pretty well, saying, you know, he didn't get a lot of closeness with offensive coordinators. Notre Dame just released their offensive coordinator, parted ways with Chip Long. But he says the offensive line coaches are the most meaningful relationships. However, he does understand, you could come to campus and the guy could be there for 4 or 5 years with you, or he could be gone a few weeks later. And so, you know, I think a very level-headed response from him. I don't think losing Matt Limegrover, I guess we should say moving on from Matt Limegrover, is going to necessarily throw everything for a loop with this offensive line class, but you're going to have to reestablish relationships. We know Kirk Shiraka, even down in Texas, was working the phones a bit, trying to you know, match faces to names and get his profile out there with Penn State recruits. It's going to be important for the next guy to come in and hit the ground running in that regard. But Sean, he is not going to inherit any kind of reclamation project. You mentioned a few of those names there. Even though you're losing Steven Gonzalez, a guy who's been in the starting lineup since 2016, five returning starters, if you factor in, you had a split situation with CJ Thorpe, Mike Miranda at the right guard spot. Des Holmes played a lot of football at the tackle position, although he was not a starter. And then you've got the three redshirt players who were just four-star prospects last class, and Wormley, Wallace, and Wiggin. So, you know, we know they have a big big class coming in on the offensive line, five guys in total. Again, it's a pretty good spot in terms of talent that you can take right away, and guys who have significant experience in Big Ten matchups.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty to work with. And going back to what Tengwell said, you've got an opportunity to build on that and just sort of make this the centerpiece of your class. He was a big fan of Tyler Bowen, and Tyler Bowen's the reason where Penn State is with him in that recruitment right now. I don't think Bowen's going to be the guy. I know he's got some offensive line coach experience. He's going to be, he was the offensive coordinator in the Cotton Bowl. But I don't think that, that's going to be the move. I think that Franklin had something in mind. I don't think it's just hiring a guy to plug in at tight ends coach and moving Bowen over. I know Bowen probably has earned some of that upward trajectory, whether it's another title or something like that, but he's done a nice job with the tight ends. I think you can keep him there. You can bring in an offensive line coach. There's been some names floated out there. It's so tough to say because Franklin keeps such a lid on it. Harry Hiestand was just let go by the Bears. Phil Troutwine at Boston College, a name that has come up quite a few times. So you've got options. Like I said, this was this just seems like a plan for Franklin. I mean, it doesn't, it's not one of those things that, you know, just all of a sudden he got to the end of the year and said, hey, this is just not working out. Matt's been here for a long time. Matt's a nice guy. We're going to move on. This seems like something that he has in order. Now, you've got the AFCA convention next week down in Nashville. So is it one of those situations where this stretches out, maybe interviews a few guys or at least, you know, talks to a few guys to keep in his memory bank for later down the stretch? But this seems like a move that Franklin had in mind for a while now and really just seemed to put it in motion with the end of the season.
Yeah, thanks. I totally bypassed his comments on Bowen in terms of Tangwall, because he did say he'd love to see Tyler Bowen get that offensive line position. As you said, you know, we'll see where they go there. But interesting to say that Bowen and Limegrover were the two kind of centerpiece recruiters at the earliest stages of Tangwall's recruitment. We're talking about, you know, ninth grade, even, you know, before high school. This is a kid who was on the radar, and it was Maryland and Penn State pretty early on because of some camps he was at. So they still do have a really strong recruiting ace up their sleeve with Tyler Bowen and working with, Tangwall, who is a five-star talent, and I think he's every bit of that five-star talent. Sean, Matt Limegrover will not be part of the Penn State equation in 2020, nor will KJ Hamler. Led the team in receiving each of the last couple of years, has two more years of eligibility. He chooses not to use them, and he is off to the 2020 NFL draft.
Yep, that's one we've been waiting on for a while. We said it after the Cotton Bowl. KJ looked like a guy that he was on his way out just emotionally after the game. And this is going to change some things for Penn State, no doubt about it. Obviously, they wanted to keep him. He's the leading receiver. Was really the centerpiece of that passing game, which obviously has to get much better without him in 2020. Would have had to get better with him in 2020. But yeah, Hamler to the NFL. This is one, breaking down the decision, you know, I think it's, I said it before, I think of the guys that were waiting to decide, I think he probably had the least to gain by coming back. He's going to come out, he's going to go to the combine, he's going to run really well. Speed is such an important attribute at the pro level, and teams will move guys up their draft, and you know, for lack of a better term, they'll reach on speed rather than, you know, some of the other guys that we've seen. That's why, you know, Deshaun Hamilton fell, and Chris Godwin, people still think he's not fast. I don't know. But, you know, it's been an interesting development for KJ. You know, he is a slot guy all the way, but there's a place for them in the NFL now. I mean, you look at where Marquise Brown went last year, and, you know, he's not the same guy, but, you know, he's a little guy. He's a fast guy. He can run routes. I think KJ will have to prove that he can be as sharp as some of those other slot guys in the draft. But, yeah, I mean, it makes sense from a standpoint of KJ probably not going to improve his draft stock a lot. You're going to probably see him in the second round, which, you know, it's that's a pretty good testament to how far he's come since he got onto campus. Of course, he arrived with a knee injury. He's had some injury history, so I'm sure that went into the decision as well. But I can't begrudge KJ for going to the NFL. I think it's probably, if we're going to, you know, call it down the middle, it's probably the right call for him.
KJ Hamler set the all-purpose freshman record for Penn State last year. Obviously, Penn State now needs to replace him as a punt returner, as a kick returner as well. For his career, 98 receptions, 1,658 yards, 13 touchdowns in 26 games. And from his first game on, I remember, Sean, that Appalachian State was about to blow the world up in Beaver Stadium, and KJ comes up with a huge kickoff return in the final drive and catches a touchdown pass that ties it from Trace McSorley. And, you know, from there on, he was a focal point of this offense. And but let's face it, as you said, there's a lot to work on with or without KJ Hamler as a part of this equation. We had a conversation on the message board following our last podcast, and, you know, he led the team in catches last year, and his total would have been fifth best on the team in 2017. So, you know, he led the team in catches this year again, but then you look at the rest of the room, and let's quickly do that. It's not a pretty picture. KJ is gone. You lose Dan Chisena and Weston Carr, a couple players who both came on scholarship as seniors. Chisena, obviously a former walk-on. Weston Carr, a former Division II All-American. They both caught three passes apiece this year. So who's left in this room? Jahan Dotson, 40 career catches, 691 yards, 5 touchdowns. Any guess who has the second most receptions after that, Sean?
Among the receivers. Oh, that's tough because
sticking to receivers.
Let's go with Cam Sullivan Brown.
Boom. A whopping dozen catches for 105 yards. He's number two in the room. Behind him, Daniel George, 11 catches, 212 yards, 1 touchdown, 95 of those yards and a touchdown against Kent State in 2018. Mac Hippenhammer, 7 receptions, 118 yards, 1 touchdown. And then Justin Weller, walk on, 1 catch, 10 yards. That's it in terms of college production among players that we anticipate will be in this room. We'll see what the transfer portal does, but you signed 5 wide receivers. You got 2 redshirt freshmen, TJ Jones, John Dunmore. Someone's got to step in. They're going to have to maybe be aggressive on the transfer market. We shall see. They went after George Campbell, a former 5-star recruit last year, ended up in West Virginia. Don't know what route they'll go, but Jared Parker, Kirk Sciarrocca, they've got their work cut out for them. And we talked on Saturday what Kirk Sciarrocca's offense produced in terms of the passing game at Minnesota. Two 1,100-yard receivers. Both those guys caught 11 touchdowns. And then you had a third receiver catch 5 touchdowns. So stark contrast to what he is walking into in Lash Building right now.
Yeah, it ain't pretty. It ain't pretty. And I don't think that, you've got 5 guys coming in. Maybe 2 of those guys are ready. Maybe 3 if Norval Black can adjust to the college game pretty fast. But yeah, that's a tall order for Jared Parker and Kirk Sciarrocca. I don't know if this changes the offense, if we see more tight ends, if we see more running backs or anything like that, but it ain't pretty. A lot of it's on Jahan Dotson. I think he's going to move into the slot, and do some things in there. I think he's capable of doing that. He's done some really nice things, scored a really nice touchdown in the Cotton Bowl. That's tough. I mean, you mentioned the transfer portal a couple of times there. It's no longer taboo to sit back and, say, hey, we're going to go look at what's out there. I think you have to be honest with you. I mean, I think that's one of the spots that you need to look at. And there's a couple spots on your roster. I was talking to somebody yesterday and the transfer portal, I think there's a little bit more out there this year. I mean, it was kind of weird last year because all you had was backups and all you had was were these sort of bit players going from being second or third string at one spot to second or third string in another spot, with the exception of just a few. This year, I think you're going to probably see more guys looking to move up, more guys that can, not saying that there's going to be a ton out floating out there, but you're going to have the opportunity to go after a few more guys. And if you're Penn State, you got to sell what you've got, and you've got open spots. I mean, obviously Daniel George is coming back, but I don't know that he's got a spot locked down. Dotson would be, in my mind, the only guy that has a spot locked down. So we'll see where that goes with this, but it ain't pretty. He's got a lot of work for this coaching staff ahead of him, a lot of work for those other guys to come back. Really interested to see where Cam Sullivan Brown is. Looked good in limited time last year. Broke his foot against Maryland. We didn't see him again. He was down at the bowl game. He was seemed to be moving around okay. Don't even know if he'll be back for the spring. But there's just not a ton of options. And really, for this passing game, which struggled down the stretch with KJ Hamler, for them to move into the spring, for them to move into the summer, with the improvement that you hope to see from Sean Clifford under Kirk Sciarrocca, man, that's a long way to go till 2020.
Now that we've got all of our listeners bummed out, just a friendly reminder that they do bring back arguably the best tight end in the country in Pat Freiermuth. And boy, does that look bigger and bigger every day that he decided not to take that early exit to the NFL for this offensive attack. And by the way, I think they can really point to what Kirk Sciarrocca has accomplished, most notably this year, if they're going to go that transfer portal market. I think if you've got a kid who's got one more year eligibility and he were to look at the stat sheet for Penn State in the last couple of years, may not look all that appealing. Kirk Sciarrocca, though, I mean, it adds a new spin to the situation, I'd imagine. Meanwhile, in terms of the comings and goings in the NFL draft, we already knew that Yetur Gross-Matos was headed to the NFL. Continue to see him projected as a first-round pick in the mock drafts that are coming out. I don't think what he's going to accomplish in a combine situation will hurt him any bit, and I think he helped himself in the bowl game. But this defense will be retaining a starter, Tariq Castro-Fields, a cornerback who stepped into a starting role this year, has played a lot of football since his true freshman year, 37 games in a Nittany Lions uniform. He's sticking around for his senior season.
Yep, and that's bigger than people think. I saw a lot of venom kind of spewed at Tariq Castro-Fields for the year that he had. And let me say first, I mean, that was not the year that he expected. It's not the year that anybody expected. He also wasn't as bad as you think he was. I think Tariq Castro-Fields, as much as anybody, probably victimized by the poor safety play by Penn State. So not a great year, a solid year. Probably, like I said, more solid than people will want to give him credit for. But he's experienced. He's going to come back. He's going to, be a leader in that cornerback room, which has some young talent. We'll see if that that cornerback room remains intact. Maybe you move somebody over to, say, maybe a Trent Gordon heads over to safety or something like that for the spring. Maybe you experiment with one of the young guys moving over. But Castro Fields coming back is going to go a long way for the secondary, which obviously has to improve. I mean, I'm not saying they were great, not saying they were, good, even especially by the end of the season. You give up 450 yards to Memphis through the air, but no, I think it'll go a long way, that stability. You get him back, you get Lamont Wade back, who I'm not sure if he's going to do one of these graphics or announcements, but you know, he's expected back. To get half your secondary back, anytime you can do that is fine. Then you got guys like Keaton Ellis and Marquise Wilson, especially, who stepped up at the end of the season. See what you've got in there. Replacing John Reed isn't going to be an easy thing based on his experience, but at the same time, you got a lot of talent coming in, especially in the younger ranks.
Tariq Castro Fields back in 2017 was one of three true freshmen to get on the football field. Remember, that's before the new redshirt rule. It was him, Yitor Gross-Matos, and Lamont Wade. We think two of those will be back in town for their final seasons in a Penn State uniform. 52 tackles, 10 pass breakups, 2 interceptions for Tariq Castro Fields this year as a first-year starter, all career highs. You mentioned that cornerback room, and you know, Terry Smith was lighting up when we were talking about those freshmen later in the season, and you can kind of see why over the course of the year. The names you mentioned, Daquan Hardy was making some noise during bowl game preparation. James Franklin identified him as a guy who was finishing strong. And then additionally, we've mentioned it before, I still think Joseph Johnson, if you're looking around this recruiting class for an impact defensive back, he's the one that I think maybe comes in and can make an impact like those guys did as true freshmen. And by the way, Joey Porter Jr., whenever we got a chance to see him on the field, you know, if he can put it together, he's got a big offseason ahead. You got to like what he brings to the football field as well. They don't lack for talent, they lack for experience, but Tariq Castro Fields is going to bring back some accountability, and you know, he's going to have to step up to a larger leadership role, because while he was not a vocal guy, John Reed, he was certainly someone who held players accountable by the way he conducted his business during his 5 years in town, and he's moving on to try his shot at the pros.
I'm looking at Marquise Wilson, and I really like the way the kid plays. He's tough. He's scrappy. Will allow them to play some man, a little bit more man than they played this year. So curious to see how he develops, not only as a player, not only as a guy that's going to learn. And he's about a year older than some of his classmates with Ellis and Porter and those guys. But I mean, he's just he's got something to him, and he's got some swagger, which you really haven't seen a ton of. I mean, John Reed's always been quiet confidence. Tariq Castro Fields, quiet confidence. Amani, the same way last year. You really haven't heard as much. I think Marquise Wilson will be that guy that runs his mouth, will be that guy that takes chances and makes plays. And so far, he's made a couple of them already. I think tied for the team lead with interceptions, had a really good one in the Cotton Bowl. So really interested to see if Marquise Wilson is the guy on the other side of Castro Fields, because if he is, I think they're going to be in good shape.
So one starter coming back on defense, another leaving, and we're waiting to find out about one more draft eligible player who could come back. That Shaka Toney mentioned after the Cotton Bowl, had a chance to speak with him in the locker room. Certainly sounded much more enthused about possibly coming back than KJ Hamler did really at any point in the last few weeks. And if he comes back, we said that is very important, because as much as you like that young talent in the defensive end room, are you ready to throw those guys really, you know, on the field for those kind of significant reps? And unfortunately, you know, Shane Simmons, Daniel Joseph, guys who have been on campus for a while, and both came in with pretty good prospect hype, and to this point, haven't really flashed the ability to be full-time starters. Now they haven't gotten there. Shane Simmons has dealt with injuries, but if Shaka Toney leaves, I think all of a sudden we go from. Let's put it this way. The defensive end room, that complexion really changes with him out of there. And if he's back, I think that's one of those set it and forget it situations at defensive end with him. And you'll take as many of those as you can get across your starting lineup.
Yeah, no doubt. And this is another spot. And we talk about how talented defensive ends are, but why not take a look at the transfer portals? Quincy Roche was the AAF player of the year, or AAC, sorry. I get my AAC, yeah. I get my conferences mixed up sometimes, even if that's a conference. Anyway, I'm rambling. But yeah, Quincy Roche is a guy that he's a phenomenal player at Temple. He's looking to move up and improve his draft status. Why not give him a shot? I think Penn State certainly is interested. It's got to me, it's more about numbers right now. You got to figure out what you're going to do. You can't just sell out on one guy. You know, when you're taking a look at receivers as well, you just signed 27. It's going to come down to the initial counters. You're counting back. It's all numbers. It's all crazy. But yeah, I could see that being a route that Penn State takes. But also, you're getting Adisa Isaac back. I spoke with Sean Spencer after the Cotton Bowl. Very excited about Adisa Isaac. Very excited about the progress that Jason Awe made as well. So you've got bodies there. It's about taking that next step. And we just keep going back to this at every position. It's about taking what you have and just adding to it, adding to that competition level. And that's gonna make your whole room better. So we'll see where Penn State goes with it, regardless of whether or not Shaka Tony comes back. But you've got an opportunity for guys to step up. You want to improve that pass rush. You want to improve them playing against the run, which they did. You know, they did really well this year. So it's be interesting to see what Shaka decides. I still think that, you know, it's probably from a draft status, from a football status, you know, he could gain a lot by coming back. But I would understand why he would go. He is one of those ones, I believe, that has his degree already.
Yeah, hate to poke your nose in people's personal decisions, especially as important as this is for these young men. But I think to your point, compared to KJ Hamler, for example, he seems like there's a lot of motivation to come back, put together a strong, another strong college campaign and build his case. And if I'm not mistaken, you know, KJ entered a pretty loaded wide receiver draft. I don't exactly know where teams are going to see Shaka, a 3-4 outside linebacker, maybe. Some many will see him with his hand in the dirt, but I, you know, this is a pretty good edge rusher class from what I've gathered. We have a lot of time to hear from all the draft experts, and but yeah, it's a tall task to jump into a group like this. We know even Yetur may be pushed to get there in the first round because of what is going on at the edge rusher position here in the 2020 draft class. So, you know, things to think about there, and but. Yeah, we'll stay tuned, and maybe by the time people listen to this, we'll have an answer from Shaka. He had suggested, you know, it would take him a little bit of time. He had more conversations to have, and at this point, you know, him, Lamont Wade, as you said, you know, we're still waiting on some of these graphics to come out, but to this point, kind of has worked out how we thought with KJ and Yetur Gross-Matos moving on. We're going to move on. We'll have a conversation in just a second with Ryan Burns, who covers the Minnesota Golden Gophers for 24/7 Sports. We had him on leading up to the matchup in November, and he's going to break down Kirk Ciarrocca, the success he had at Minnesota, what he'll bring to Penn State, what he could do for Sean Clifford and that receiver room potentially. Stay tuned for that conversation, but first a word from our sponsor.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
He was a hit when we had him on during the season. Now we're bringing him back for another round. Ryan Burns of Gopher Illustrated. Ryan, it's great to have you back on the show.
Yeah, appreciate you having me back on all the way out here from Minnesota.
Minnesota. He just had a fantastic trip to Tampa for an Outback Bowl win for the Gophers. Really done a great job covering Minnesota all season long. No exception to the week leading up to the game and after the Penn State game in November. But I think we're having you on for a different reason. It's obvious why. Kirk Shiraka is the new offensive coordinator at Penn State. And first off, to get into it, I think the question everybody has, what do we call him? Do we call him KC? Do we call him Coach Rock? Do we call him Coach The Rock? I mean, what are you going by?
Yeah, back when he was here in Minnesota, he either went by, if you knew him well, he went by Rock, just Rock. There's no Coach Rock. I usually just called him Shiraka. Didn't call him Kirk too much, but certainly his nickname amongst the Gopher staff members out here was just Rock, which, again, Kirk Shiraka, that's where you get the Rock there in the middle. But I've never heard KC. That would be a new one. But I think we should probably just stick to Shiraka or Rock.
Well, he rocked this year at Minnesota, obviously a memorable year for the Gophers. Well, I mean, what did you see from him? I mean, you've been covering him for a couple of years now. What do his offenses bring to the table? I mean, what sticks out to you about a Kirk Shiraka offense?
There are essentially three plays, and I know that that sounds incredibly simple. I know, I'm aware, trust me, I hear it all the time, or I heard it a lot over the last 3 years, but there were three mainstays in a Kirk Shiraka offense, and that is inside zone running, outside zone, and then the RPO game. Now, the thing that makes Kirk Shiraka so tricky and what makes his offense so effective is the way he calls the games, the way he is able to implement different variations of those plays to really make sure that his offense can move the ball. But I would highly anticipate whoever Penn State does hire as an offensive line coach, they're going to be someone well-versed in the zone running scheme, because that is what Minnesota has done, and that's what Kirk Shiraka has done at Western Michigan, at Minnesota. So you're going to see a lot of zone blocking. Then you're going to see two plays that are, again, in the passing game that are going to seem incredibly simple to defend. But I just watched Tyler Johnson, Minnesota's receiver, put up 12 catches for 204 yards and two touchdowns. And essentially, he just ran slants and he ran posts. It's not the most difficult route in the world. It really isn't. But the way that you need to have this offense succeed, you need to have great route runners, is because that's how these receivers get open on these more simple type of routes, is you need to be a great route runner. Excuse me there. You need to be able to create separation. That's what his system thrives on. Now, I'll also be curious to see how much of a running quarterback comes into play, because at Minnesota, they've had Tanner Morgan. In years two and three here, in year one, they didn't really have a great quarterback there. But using the quarterback in that RPO game, the run-pass option, is Penn State's version of Kirk Shiraka's offense going to have a running quarterback? I'm going to be very curious to see, because they need to be able to keep that defensive end honest. Because if that defensive end is just going to crash in on the running back every time, you're going to have 1-2 yard gains. That's not going to help you. But if he can be able to implement and try to have his quarterbacks run a little bit more, I know that was something that he really wanted to implement here at Minnesota, was having the quarterback be a threat with his legs, maybe just taking the ball 3 to 5 times a game. It's not a lot. He doesn't want to put a lot of wear and tear on the body, but it's a very simple offense. A lot of zone running, a lot of RPO, and a lot of slants.
Wear and tear on the offense, specifically at quarterback Sean Clifford, end of the year. You know, it was pretty obvious that he was injured from running so much. I mean, is this a situation where over the last couple of years you've seen Shiraka play to the personnel? I mean, is that really what he's all about, is playing to the personnel? And to follow up on that, you and I talked a little bit off air before about using the tight end, which he didn't do at Minnesota, but he's got a pretty darn good one here at Penn State. I mean, how do you see him adjusting to personnel versus, you know, just going in with his own scheme?
That's going to be the question. Now, I've seen it firsthand that Shiraka will fit He fits his scheme to the players, in terms of, you make sure that what he's calling is going to be to their strengths, and he's not just going to try to jam square pegs into round holes. That's not how Kirk Shiraka operates. But as I mentioned off air here, I am incredibly curious to see how Shiraka implements Pat Freiermuth, because Minnesota's passing game to the tight end over essentially the Shiraka's entire 3 years here was non-existent. I believe in 2018, Minnesota threw to their tight ends 8 times. And this year, it couldn't have been more than 10. And we're talking about Pat Freiermuth, who's going to have 18 catches in 2 games. And this is going to be, I think, Kirk Ciarca's thing that he's got to work out with Penn State's head coach there is, how does James Franklin implement to Kirk Ciarca, hey, we don't have Hamler anymore, so you might want to make Pat Freiermuth the focal point of this offense. So I don't know if that's going to be, they're going to split him out into the slot. I'm very, very curious to see what he's able to do there with Freiermuth. That's probably the biggest thing I'm excited to see is, this is the best tight end that I believe that Kirk Ciarca has had in his offensive coordinator days. That's going to be just something that I will be keeping an eye on here. Very, 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 oh, how do I want to phrase it? I'll be watching with a keen eye on that, because Ciarca's offense, it does really fit the players of the scheme, because in year one, Minnesota's offense was dreadful, but they also had dreadful players around them that really couldn't get open. The offensive line couldn't get a lot of push up front. They weren't great moving in space. Now in year three this past year, that's why Minnesota had so much success, is they had more players that fit to what Ciarca wants to do. Now, Penn State obviously recruits at a higher level than what Minnesota does. They have some higher caliber of athletes. Now it's about refining them into this offense for Kirk.
Those wide receivers were among the best Penn State saw all season. How much have they developed during his time there? You talk about where they stood a couple of years ago versus where they're at now. But these receivers in general, where was their floor when they got to Minnesota versus where they're at now? I mean, how long did that take to sort of click for those guys?
Yeah, Minnesota's receiving core when PJ Fleck and Kirk Ciarca took over in 2017 was dreadful. It was abysmal. It was incredibly mediocre. Minnesota hadn't really had anything going in the passing game since Eric Decker, which was back 10, 15 years ago. And Tyler Johnson was a freshman on that 2017 team that PJ Fleck took over. And he was like 4th-string wide receiver. And now he's leaving here after a spectacular bowl game as the all-time leader in receiving yards, receiving touchdowns. He's 2nd all-time in catches. And you look at what Minnesota's been able to do these last 2 years. Tyler Johnson is 2018 season, is 2019 season. They're top number one and number three all time for single season receiving yards. Rashad Bateman's 2019 season is number 2 all time for single season receiving yards. They know what they're doing in terms of being able to develop wide receivers. Now, I'll say this. Kirk wasn't incredibly involved with the wide receiver development, but where I trust Kirk is with quarterbacks. Kirk Ciarca knows what he's looking for in quarterback recruiting. And that's the biggest thing that essentially the only thing he was tasked with in recruiting was he was the quarterback recruiter. And I look at some of the guys that Minnesota wasn't able to land, but guys like Max Duggan, who is this true freshman starter at TCU, Hank Bachmeier, true freshman starter at Boise State, a kid by the name of Holton Ayers at ECU, who is a true freshman starter. All these guys that Minnesota was tremendously interested in were turned out to be true freshman starters for their team. And that doesn't always happen with some of the guys that you go after a quarterback. And even you look at what he's done with Tanner Morgan here. Tanner Morgan didn't have any other Power 5 options when he was going to go to Western Michigan. And then the day before he was supposed to enroll on campus for an early enrollee, he flips to Minnesota, and now he was 2nd team all Big Ten. Ciarca knows how to develop quarterbacks. That I trust. That I know. I've seen it firsthand. Now I'm going to be curious with the way that he's going to be able to go after these higher caliber of quarterbacks. How does Kirk Ciarca continue to develop those quarterbacks, and how does he adjust to being able to recruit quarterbacks at the highest level he's ever been able to do that at? But if there's one thing I could stress to your audience is trust Ciarca with quarterback development. I think he's proven it pretty well. For those who don't know, Joe Flacco, who was his offensive coordinator and quarterback coach at Delaware, it was Kirk Ciarca. I mean, he's coached NFL guys before, and he's turned these lower star guys into very solid and very productive college quarterbacks, and I expect him to do the same at Penn State.
Well, you saw Penn State this year. Of course, Sean Clifford expected to be the starter next year. But, I mean, it's kind of a similar skill set to what he wants to run or what he has run in the past on offense. Where did you see the biggest strides from Tanner Morgan? I mean, maybe not just, you know, throwing, you know, as a physical thrower or an athlete or anything like that. What did you see in terms of progressions, in terms of his grasp of the offense and how far that came under Shiraka in the last, I'd say, year?
Sure. Yeah. It took a little bit of time for Tanner to do so. And that's where even we're talking with Rock earlier in the year, the biggest thing he stressed to the media on a given week was he doesn't want to overload his quarterbacks. He wants to make sure that they eat everything on their figurative plate. And if they eat everything on their plate for that game or for that practice, he's going to add a little bit more the next day and a little bit more the next day. And as long as they keep finishing their plate, he's going to add more and the quarterback's going to have a little bit more ability to do different things in the offense. And that's where with Tanner Morgan, as the season went on, he became more comfortable in what he was looking for on certain reads, what he was looking for when he was watching film with Rock. If there's anything, I mean, you saw it firsthand, these Penn State fans did, when Kirk Shiraka has a couple of weeks to game plan, he's going to feel pretty confident of what he's doing. That's why Minnesota was able to move the ball so effectively against the Nittany Lions. Was that's something that Shiraka talked about a couple of days after, was he, when, while the rest of his staff was out recruiting, he was in watching a ton of Penn State film, developing a game plan and making sure that Tanner Morgan was fully prepared when they started to implement things that next week. And that's where I just think that the relationship between him and the quarterback is very, very important. It's very important for Rock and it's very important for the quarterback to be on the same page. Now, I don't anticipate, unless something changes, Penn State allowing their quarterback in this offense to do a lot of checks. Now, Shiraka is going to be the one checking things from the press box up there, but it'll be a lot of look over to the sidelines to see if Rock wants to check to something else or if he wants to stick in that play call. So as Clifford and Shiraka's relationship starts to develop here this spring, that's one thing to notice. How much does Shiraka continue to put on the plate of Clifford each day in practice? And then as you watch the 2020 season unfold, how do you see his responsibilities get bigger?
From watching Minnesota, they didn't seem married to any sort of personnel groupings. You know, a lot of 11 personnel with the three fantastic wide receivers that they had, but they also did some things with some overloading, some unbalanced line stuff. Is there a, you know, you don't want to nail down tendencies based off of one game, but is there something that you see from that point of view that you can say, hey, I think he's going to go to Penn State. I think this is something that you can expect from, you know, maybe seeing two tight ends, maybe seeing an overload, maybe going to the well a little bit more than I guess you typically would.
Yeah, I don't pretend to be incredibly in depth in knowing what kind of personnel that Penn State has coming back, but I can assure you that what his characteristics are in his offense is 11 personnel. Now, Minnesota's tight end was essentially just a glorified run blocker. That's what he was 95-98% of the time. Even if he was going out running routes, he was not the first read. That's obviously going to change at Penn State with Freiermuth. So that's going to be one of the things that he's going to adapt. But you're going to see a lot of shotgun. I would be very surprised if a majority of that offense wasn't 98% shotgun. I think for the first time all season, yesterday in the Outback Bowl, I saw Minnesota go under center, and that was only for a QB sneak. We don't see a lot of pistol in terms of the running back being aligned up behind the quarterback, just a lot of shotgun. You're going to see jet sweeps. You're going to see bubble screens. You're going to see tunnel screens. You're just going to see a lot of things out of 11 personnel because that's what Shiraka wants to do. He wants to spread the field so that teams cannot overload the box. And if they do decide to put eight in the box with only six blockers up front, that means you have one-on-one matchups on the outside. And he really wants to trust his receivers. He wants to trust that his quarterback can be accurate enough to put up a pretty good 50-50 ball for his receivers to go get it. But you're going to see a lot of spreading the field. You did see two tight ends at some point, and when you were getting into the red zone or the green zone or these third down situations. But I also say he's not afraid to adapt in terms of the wildcat. Minnesota had a player by the name of Seth Green these past couple of years that he wasn't afraid to go to in a wildcat kind of situation, to where that's what his skill set was best suited for, being a 6'5", 250-pound athlete that can really get these short yardage things. So he's not afraid to adapt, but he really wants to spread you out horizontally.
Probably good news for Will Levis. And you walked right into my trap. You said 98% in the shotgun, 2% lower than Penn State has gone since Joe Moorhead got here in 2016. They've been 100% shotgun. So, yeah, you opened up a can of worms there. People in Pennsylvania, some of them hold that near and dear to their heart going under center. So this is something we should not expect then, is what you're saying?
It's going to be shotgun all the time. I'd be very surprised. Maybe 98% selling it a little bit too short. It probably will be 100% unless something changes. That's the way this offense operates, and that's the way I see it continuing to go with the Nittany Lions.
And while we're on that, any thoughts on fullbacks?
That's going to be a new one for me. Is you saw it at, I'll say this, you saw it a lot more in 2018 than you did in 2019. Minnesota did do some things with an H-back where you would have a tight end being a traditional Y, right aligned with the right tackle, and then you would have an H-back right behind him. It's a little bit more difficult to kind of do with the fullback in terms of going, you know, one guy running back on the left side of the quarterback, a fullback on the right side from what I've seen out of a Shiraka offense. But they had a kid by the name of Colton Beebe in 2018 who was just a mauler, and he was a really good lead blocker. And they didn't have that this past year, and that's where you saw him go away from that. But we have seen him use a fullback type as an H-back that'll motion across the formation.
Fullback type, not a true fullback. Anyway, going back to that, people in Pennsylvania also want them to run the damn ball. It's been a hashtag. It's been something that they leaned on pretty heavily. Kirk Shiraka runs the ball quite a bit. What can you say about the running game?
Kirk Shiraka has said numerous times with the Minnesota media over the last 3 years that RTB, a.k.a. Row the Boat, doesn't mean that in his offense. It means run the ball. And he's not afraid to run the ball. I believe Minnesota runs the ball if they're, you know, moving the ball well. It's 60-65% clip. This is one of the most run-heavy offenses, I think, in the Big Ten, especially if they can get things going in that zone running game. So I can assure your listeners, Shiraka wants to run the ball. There were very few times this year where Minnesota passed the ball more than 30 times a game. It was very, 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 very limited. Now, that's what happens when you win 11 games in a given season, is you're in a lot of positive game scripts. You get to be able to run the ball a lot, but you're going to see a lot of run. Again, your listeners should know you're going to see a lot of running, whether it's jet sweeps, inside zone, outside zone. But those last two are the bread and butters, the inside zone and the outside zone. Shiraka is going to lean on that heavy. This is going to be an offense that's going to run the ball in an ideal scenario, 40 plus times a game. And I'll also say this, Shiraka wants to have 2-3 running backs rotate in. He wants to be able to make sure that he can keep these guys healthy throughout an entire game. So I wouldn't expect you to see a running back get more than 20-23 touches in a game because he wants to keep them fresh throughout an entire season. But we'll see what he decides to do at Penn State.
So if you're listening and you're really taking in what Ryan has to say, a ton of similarities between what Penn State has wanted to do over the last couple of seasons and what they're going to do. So the changes won't be that big. We touched on a little bit before him as a recruiter. Penn State kind of uses their coordinators in a different way. Now, Brent Pry has some of his areas. Ricky Ronnie has had some of his areas. But for the most part, just an overall offensive recruiter, overall defensive recruiter is kind of coming in and closing, doing the thing, doing that kind of thing. What does Kirk Shiraka do when he gets into a living room? I mean, what is this a guy that you look to as a recruiter? Is this a guy that you look to as sort of maybe an icing on top type guy?
I would say Shiraka, he is not a big guy and showing a ton of emotion. And now he'll joke around with you, certainly, but his recruiting prowess was limited only to quarterbacks, and where Minnesota didn't take a 2020 quarterback. So he wasn't out on the road a ton. He doesn't have a specific area. He would only travel around the country to see specific quarterbacks. And Minnesota's already got a 2021 four-star quarterback from the state of Illinois and Ethan Kaliak-Manis that has been committed since the spring of 2019. So I wouldn't I don't expect Kirk Shiraka to be a dynamic recruiter. Now he can talk X's and O's with you. He can talk with you on the visit, but he is a guy on the recruiting trail that at Minnesota was not asked to do a lot. So we'll see if that changes any at Penn State.
He has come from working from PJ Fleck. He's going to go work for James Franklin. You got to imagine that that's You know, a similar outlook. But what do you think of this hire in general? I mean, just a lot of people on in the national media seem to think, you know, really good X's and O's guy, really good football guy, really good hire. From your vantage point, I mean, does Kirk Scirocco fit the profile of a guy that James Franklin's hiring to go try and win a national championship?
I think if Kirk Scirocco can get his offense executing well within the next couple of years, you're going to see an offense, especially with the caliber of athletes that Penn State can get in there. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be a lot of points, and you're going to see an offense that is going to be able to move the ball consistently, because he was able to do that once Minnesota had the right pieces. I've heard numerous college coaches tell me that Kirk Scirocco is the godfather of the RPO. It's a system he is incredibly comfortable with. He knows the counters of how, if someone's going to try to sit inside on you on the slant, well, then you hit him with a slant and go. I saw Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson both score long touchdowns on different easy things like that, to where you can adjust to that. And I think that if Scirocco can get that offense moving like Minnesota was able to get it moving in year three this year, this is an offense that can certainly put up 30 plus points a game. And especially with the kind of guys that they have on defense for Penn State, I think that's going to win you a lot of ball games. But I love the hire for Penn State. Scirocco is a great human being. I think he's a very, very good coach. He's one of the smartest offensive minds I've talked to in a very long time. He knows his system in and out. And I know that him being a Pennsylvania guy, this job means a ton to him. This is the big reason why he ended up taking the job was he's from, I believe, 90 minutes southeast of Happy Valley. His family grew up Penn State fans. He grew up a Penn State fan. His family's from out there. His kids in college are on the East Coast. This means a lot to him. And especially when you get your dream job, you want to prove to everybody that it's worth it, that I was the right pick. And I know that Scirocco's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder to try to prove that he was the right hire for James Franklin. So I do think this is a kind of offense that if it can get implemented and if everybody can understand their roles, you're going to see a lot of points on the board in Happy Valley.
That's Ryan Burns from Gopher Illustrated. Ryan, thanks for joining us. I'm sure you're happy to be back in Minnesota. I'm sure you got a sunburn from your time in Tampa, but we appreciate the time that you took for us. Once again, hopefully we'll be able to touch base again. But Ryan, thanks for joining us on the Lions 24/7 podcast.
Appreciate it.
Good stuff there from Ryan Burns. Second time he's been on the podcast. Obviously, he's done a great job both times. So I hope everybody enjoyed that. He had plenty of things to say about Kirk Scirocco and the potential impact that he could have at Penn State. Moving on to recruiting, not a ton this time of year. It is a dead period, so no visitors, no visits, no any of that stuff. But it is All-American season. Penn State sent three guys to the Under Armour All-American Bowl. Tight end Theo Johnson, cornerback/safety Enzo Jennings, and linebacker Curtis Jacobs. Some impressive things from those guys early in the week, and then all of a sudden, the risk comes into play with these All-American games. Theo Johnson going out on a one-on-one against Jordan Toles, an LSU commit from Baltimore, gets his shoulder yanked. Looks like he pulled it out. He went down in a lot of pain, but, you know, he wanted to play on Thursday night. Seems like everything's okay. So I think the biggest thing to take away from that is doesn't seem to be a long-term injury. It's something that, you know, he gets to Penn State, they'll check out. They'll see if he has to rehab the rotator cuff or anything like that. But it seems like crisis avoided with Theo Johnson.
Yeah, hopefully for him, just a scare, and certainly hopefully for the Penn State staff, as they want to get him acclimated and underway with you know, his college career very soon. And the good news is, you know, you get to a college campus and you have a lot of amenities in terms of a medical staff and what they're able to do with you and rehabilitation and all that stuff. So that makes a big difference as opposed to him not being able to get to campus until, say, June. So a silver lining there, and also the fact that, you know, he was not in any kind of medical gear when he resurfaced the following day. So certainly wish him a speedy recovery. When you look ahead a little bit here, Sean, 2021 class, Caleb Williams again in the spotlight and again drawing praise from a bunch of our 24/7 sports recruiting analysts who are down there. And again, he seems to be further hammering home the point that he's the number one guy in this class.
Yeah, finally people are coming around to him being the best quarterback in the country. It was something I've been saying for a long time. This kid's phenomenal. He was a top performer by 24/7 Sports at the UA Future 50, which is, you know, kind of the premier camp in terms of getting talent together in the junior class. But yeah, I mean, he's He's a good one, and it's going to be interesting because Brock Vandegrift, the Oklahoma commit in the 2021 class, decommitted. You know, he looks to be headed to Georgia. Maybe that takes Georgia out of play. Maybe that brings Oklahoma back into play. Caleb Williams says, you know, he's going to let the dust settle among coaches and coordinators and all that kind of stuff, take some officials, maybe decide in the summer. You know, I hesitate to say that that's good for Penn State because you're not going to be able to show the product before. But then again, when you take a look at quarterbacks, I mean, that's actually a fairly late decision for a quarterback when you're talking dominoes. So, you know, I think there's good and bad to it. I still think Penn State's playing catch up here. I think the good thing with bringing in Kirk Shiraka, you give yourself another opportunity, whether it be in January or after the dead period in February, to get Caleb Williams back onto campus to make another pitch to see what to see if he gels with the new offensive coordinator and see if he fits in the new offense. I still think he's headed elsewhere, but you know, Penn State's still in this one among probably 5 to 7 other schools.
And they've taken a very calculated approach, him and his family, to this recruitment, doing it very much on their own terms. And that's how you often see the top quarterbacks handle it. It's just a different process at that position. And coming off of their most recent trip to campus, which was the first weekend of December, I believe, his father told 24/7 Sports that, you know, the elephant in the room was that there was starting to be some rumors swirling about Ricky Ronnie maybe taking that ODU job. And within 24 to 48 hours or whatever it was, those were confirmed and he was gone. So, That definitely is a different dynamic. And again, Kirk Shiraka has that nice track record. He talked about it during his first interview with Penn State that they put out there about what he can point to and the evidence he has in developing quarterbacks. And that's huge. You know, said before when you went out to make this hire, very important to find somebody who can point to names and point to quarterbacks they've made better, or quarterbacks they've helped get to the NFL, because that is huge, that kind of track record. And they have that right now with Kirk Shiraka, and that should be able to help them a bit with some of these quarterbacks. Another name that we mentioned, Landon Tengwall, a big one in 2021. He was down there as well. As we said, he's got a top three. It sounds like he's just about ready to turn his attention towards official visits. He said he told Brian Doney may take another official visit to his top three. He mentioned that Notre Dame is quite hard to get to. And then, you know, official visits and you know, he seems like a guy who, I think once those official visits are behind him, he'll be ready to make a move, I'd imagine.
Well, there's one school in that top three that's easy to get to, and he's been up to Penn State several times. I still like where Penn State stands with Tengwall. I mean, I don't think it's a matter of when rather than if, but I mean, they got to feel pretty good about where they're standing, especially with Tyler Bowen doing his work there. Tengwall had a good camp. He's, you know, he's a tackle or guard in the good sense of that word. I think that he can play guard and be a really good one. I also think that he can play tackle. So really interested to see, you know, how he stood up against the nation's top pass rushers, did a pretty good job. And he's also, you know, from a different standpoint, he's a vocal kid. He's a guy that's very visible out there. I think he can be a recruiter if you get him on board early. I think he can be a centerpiece to your class and be a recruiter. Whereas I'm not sure that, you know, Nolan Rucci is that personality. So Tengwall is a guy that you certainly want in your class sooner rather than later, because I think he can bring sort of a domino effect. He can bring a lot to your class that, you know, just some guys don't. So really pleased to see with his performance. Two guys from Virginia, Tony Grimes, the five-star cornerback that was up in December, and Trevion Henderson, the running back from the Richmond area that was up in November, I believe, for a game. Two really good performances by those games. Those guys are just, you look at the videos, their feet are on another level. It's insane to watch. Tony Grimes is a long corner. He's maybe 6 foot, close to 6'1", but also he's got a tremendous back pedal. He's got great feet, change of direction, all that kind of stuff. And Trevion Henderson, man, I continue to beat the drum for this kid. We have him ranked too low. I think in the low 200s. I think he's a top 100 player. He's another guy. He's like Tony Grimes. I mean, he's got legit size. I mean, he's bigger than I thought he would be. 5'10", you know, maybe 5'10 and a half, 5'11", 190. But man, his feet are something. He just gets going. Hips are great, all this kind of stuff. So Trevion Henderson, while you don't really get much out of running backs in this situation, this scenario, really had a good camp.
Yeah, and Grimes, you mentioned about 6 foot, but that doesn't tell a story. This is a long-limbed athlete, a kid kind of in that Joseph Johnson in terms of, you know, he can cover a lot of real estate with that, you know, with his just wingspan, and that's obviously a huge thing to be able to do in pass coverage, and he's the number one cornerback as of right now in those composite rankings as we look. Going back to something you said as we started this recruiting segment, you said, you know, this time of year, not much to talk about. It's amazing how much things have changed that we're having. We're first week of January and saying, well, you know, the recruiting cycle is pretty much cashed in and, you know, Penn State's got their guys. And I saw an interesting stat tweeted from 24/7 Sports earlier this week, Sean. In the third year of the early signing period, 88.6% of committed prospects signed and 76.8% of the entire 2020 class signed. And as we said, now it's a numbers game for a lot of schools. Guys are going to get their offers. And to this point, still not a lot of noise on Penn State if they have an inkling of pursuing more prospects. As we said, they obviously have a target board. They have relationships in place. But as we are now about a month away from the February 5th traditional signing day, you know, the signing day is the first day of that signing period, and Penn State got 27 guys on board. So, again, it's just strange that we're in January and we're very quickly talking about the guys who are going to be signing, you know, still have their senior years ahead of them next fall. They're halfway through junior year.
Yeah, I'm doing this decommitment tracker right now on the site, and I'm seeing guys that decommitted in, you know, on January 25th, just before signing day. I'm like, well, that's a shame. I don't have to deal with that anymore. So, it's been a positive change from our mindset. Of course, with the coaching changes, you know, it kind of throws everybody for a loop that's actually involved in the situation, the players and the families and the coaches and everything like that. But still, at the same time, it's nice to not have to do this extra 6 weeks of will they or won't they. A lot of these guys that were down at the All-American games, the seniors, already signed. So not much movement on that end. From Penn State's perspective, they're going to go back, you know, they're going to reset the deck and see what's out there. I don't know that there's anybody that jumps out to me in 2020 that makes it to an official visit, that makes it to an offer and to that process. So we'll see what happens. 27 commits, that's a lot of commits. And then when you take into account the transfer portal, guys that will count against you in terms of initial counters, like I said, it all comes back to math. The math is a little gray. I mean, it's not a set number. It is a set number, but the math's a little gray with how Penn State or how these schools will be able to count back and do things that sort of fudge the numbers, for lack of a better term. So you don't know how many spots they actually have, but you got to save some for transfers. We saw the impact they had on the college game. We saw the impact they had on the college football playoff this year. So it's a numbers game, and Penn State's going to go into January, you know, feeling pretty solid about where they stand for this current cycle.
You just talked about Travion Henderson being a big-time running back target for this team in the 2021 class. Their marketing ability at that position, beyond Jaywon Sider, who has done a great job recruiting wherever he has been in college football, but here at Penn State for the second consecutive year, the leading total yardage among all NFL rookies was produced by a Penn State alum, and it's Miles Sanders this time around. Last year, Saquon Barkley went for over 2,000. Sanders got it done on the ground this year, 818 rushing yards, 509 receiving yards on 50 catches, 6 total touchdowns. 1,600 all-purpose yards, factoring in his kick returns. But in terms of offensive production, rushing, receiving, he ends up edging out Jacobs of the Oakland Raiders. And he'll, you know, if he's healthy, it sounds like he's a day-to-day situation. He may be able to make his playoff debut coming off of that. And as we said last episode, he finds himself very much in the Rookie of the Year mix. And Jaywon Sider and James Franklin and Kirk Shiraka and you know, the graphics department at Penn State, they can have a field day with this as much as they want, because it is a tremendous situation for them to be able to point to.
Yeah, and he's not in the top 50 rookies among Pro Football Focus's ratings, which I don't know, man. It's one thing to be, you know, I'm a beer guy, so I like to drink the good stuff, and I like to talk about beer and all that kind of stuff. But I'm not above, you know, saying, hey, this beer sells more than anything, you know, it might be okay. So it's just Pro Football Focus is so far out there with this, hey, this is how we do things. This is Miles Sanders does things in a different way. So he's not as good as you think he is. And you know what? Numbers are numbers. They can be skewed in any which direction. But to lead all NFL rookies in total yards and not be in the top 50, what are we doing here, man? I mean, what do these ratings say? So I don't know. A lot of pressure on Nick Yeary next year. I don't know that he's going to equal Saquon and Miles, but you know the way that they're churning him out, maybe he's got a shot.
Yeah, I hope that was just a mistake not getting him on the list. I don't know if the author defended that list or not with Miles Sanders, but I did see Miles retweeted it, so I'm sure it got some traction, and I know Penn State fans are aware of it on the Twitterverse as well. One other quick note from the Penn State backfield, Trace McSorley gets his first appearance. Lamar Jackson took a seat in the finale against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Ravens had the top seed in the AFC locked up. Trace got in for one play, started out at wide receiver, went in motion, joined Robert Griffin III in the backfield, ended up getting the snap, and went for 1 yard and one first down. So welcome to the NFL officially. He's been collecting paychecks now for several months in the NFL, but his first opportunity to get in a game. And I was thinking, you know, he's going to take the back seat again now. He probably won't be active unless something happens injury-wise to either RG3 or Lamar Jackson. But he's got as good a shot as anybody right now in the league to maybe go and get himself a Super Bowl ring. I mean, they're a hell of a team. They've got 12 straight wins, and he's been a part of the ride in one way or the other. Obviously, much of it behind the scenes, but very cool to see Trace McSorley get that opportunity. Saw him do some nice things in the preseason, and they're showing off kind of his versatility, which is what we heard a lot from the Ravens staff this summer, lining up at wide receiver, ending up in the backfield, and doing some running. Has not thrown a pass yet, but has logged a stat in the NFL, and it was a first down.
Yeah, and on the other coast, Kevin Givens got the call up from the practice squad to the 49ers active roster, so that's cool. I mean, I know people are probably, you know, wish they could have had Kevin Givens for another year, but good to see he stuck around with the team for an entire year, and then he gets to the active roster for a pretty darn good team who just signed Anthony Zettel last week as well. So that's pretty cool to see. He'll be going to the playoffs. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see the development of Penn State's NFL players this year. I mean, we knew Allen Robinson was really good. We knew that Chris Godwin was really good, but you're now talking two probably top 10 receivers, top 15 receivers in the league. Miles Sanders and, of course, Saquon Barkley, even with that line that Saquon's running behind. How about him just taking off and waving goodbye at the 50? special player, obviously. So a lot, Penn State's got a lot going for it, especially skill guys, which, you know, hasn't always been the case with Penn State.
And I would be very ashamed of myself if I didn't point out Mr. South Jersey, Mike Gesicki, getting it done, beating the Patriots on the road with a touchdown, part of the Fitz magic with Miami. They finished strong. They went 5-4 down the stretch, and Mike was a big part of that. Last couple of games, he had 19 total targets in those last two games, three touchdowns. So after a quiet first year and a half of his career, Mike Gesicki really showing what he can do and becoming more of a force for the Miami Dolphins, who all of a sudden look like maybe an ascending team. Who saw that coming?
And a force for the Chiefs, apparently, who was really grateful for his his heroics there in the game. So, no, it's been interesting to watch those Dolphins. Brian Flores has done a heck of a job down there. But Gesicki has come into his own. And, you know, it's just another guy that you can throw up on the board and say, hey, we've got some production at different spots in the NFL.
We'll keep tabs on those players as the NFL playoffs get underway this year. As we said, KJ Hamler will be joining them in the league next year, along with Ettore Gross Matos. We'll keep you posted on Lines 24/7 with Shaka Toney, and of course, the latest on the search for a new offensive line coach. Pretty long show today, Sean, considering what's going on around town. Thanks to Ryan for having us for joining us again. Any final parting shots before we hit the road?
No, I think I'm going to plug that audio in here, and this is going to be a longer episode than both of us expected. I know you're getting on the road, but yeah, can't wait for some NFL playoff action this weekend. You know, Redskins are done, so I guess my season's over. That's a shame, but they've got a new coach. They've got a new defensive coordinator, and it's apparently Thanksgiving in Washington, D.C., so it's great all around.
Well, I'm heading to my first 100th birthday party. My wife's grandfather, Opa, big shout out to him. I don't think he listens to the podcast, but World War II veteran, yeah. Holocaust survivor. Who knows? He's on Netflix now, so I don't. Who knows? But shout out to him. Thanks to everybody for listening to start off the new year. We'll be back next week with a fresh episode for the latest on Penn State football and recruiting. On behalf of Sean Fitz, I'm Tyler Donahue. Have a great weekend.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.